Cavalcade of America, starring Rex Harrison in Experiment at Monticello. Presented by the DuPont Company, makers of better things for better living through chemistry. Experiment at Monticello, starring Rex Harrison as Thomas Jefferson on the DuPont Cavalcade of America. The White House, 1801. In his study in the Executive Mansion, Thomas Jefferson, newly elected third president of the United States, and his daughter Patsy are reading letters that have just arrived by the post. And suddenly, Patsy says...
Oh, my goodness.
What is it, my dear?
This letter from Philadelphia, Father. There's an outbreak of the smallpox. Jenny Somerset.
Jenny Somerset. Oh, what a pity. A sweet child.
And her sister Harriet, too. Oh, Father, do you suppose... Will they... Is it always fatal?
Very often, my dear. Smallpox takes a greater toll of our countrymen than any other disease.
You mean there's nothing that'll cure it? Nothing at all?
Curious you're asking that just now, Patsy. This letter I was reading, it's from a Boston physician named Benjamin Waterhouse. Listen, my dear. Dear Mr. President, I conceive that a work that has for its end the good of the community would not be unacceptable to you. I am therefore enclosing my pamphlet entitled A Prospect of Exterminating Smallpox by Means of Vaccination. I've heard of this Dr. Waterhouse. He's not precisely a popular figure up there in Boston.
Well, if he's poorly thought of, there must be a reason for it. He's probably a charlatan, Father.
Not necessarily, my dear. It happens that this good doctor's enemies are man for man, the very gentlemen who've been most bitter in their denunciation of me.
Oh?
Oh, they're against progress of all kinds, especially in matters of science. No, Patsy, this man's enemies are his recommendation. I shall inquire of Dr. Waterhouse for some of this vaccination matter he says he possesses.
And what will you do with it, Father?
Well, my dear, tomorrow, as you know, we leave for Monticello. I shall have it sent there.
To Monticello? But what will you do with it?
I've an idea. I'm not quite sure. I should like a little time to think it over.
It's a few days later at Jefferson's home, Monticello. The president has not yet arrived from Washington. And all about the house and grounds, there's an air of expectancy. As tenants and workmen and servants await Jefferson's first visit home as President of the United States. At the far end of the vast lawn under a gnarled oak tree, a boy and girl are sitting, staring pensively at the fleecy sky. The girl is Sally Corcoran, daughter of Jefferson's overseer. The boy, well, his name is Druce, John Druce.
John? How do you address the President of the United States?
Mr. President, of course.
I wonder if he's changed any. John.
Yes, Sally?
Would you be wishing to meet him? Mr. Jefferson, after he's rested from his trip, of course.
Well, of course I'd wish to meet him. Who wouldn't wish to meet the President of the United States? The question is, would he wish to meet me, a nobody? And the answer is, no, he wouldn't.
You're not a nobody, John. You're brilliant. A brilliant medical student, and someday you're going to be a fine doctor.
Oh, that's what you think because, well, because you're fond of me.
Is that why?
But that's not enough to make Mr. Jefferson wish to waste any of his valuable time on me. In fact,
if you can arrange to just happen to be strolling about the paddock at about 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, who do you think you'll see?
Whom do you think you'll see?
That's what I meant, who?
Thomas Jefferson?
How did you guess? Oh, it's a miracle, John, the way you're always reading a person's mind.
And I'll stroll by and lift my hat and say good afternoon, Your Excellency. And he'll say good afternoon, boy, and mistake me for one of the stable hands. Ah, Sally, why on earth should he take the trouble to talk to me?
Because he talks to everybody.
Oh?
And particularly because you're a medical student. He's very interested in medicine.
So I've heard. He's also interested in architecture, astronomy, mathematics, music, and philosophy. He's the man who wrote the Declaration of Independence and the President of the United States. And he's going to drop everything and have a little chat with me.
Yes.
Why?
Because I'll arrange it.
How?
Well, dear, Mr. Jefferson always makes an inspection of Monticello when he comes back from a long trip. That's how I know he'll be at the stables. And Father always goes along with him because Father's the overseer. And tomorrow, Father will take me. And you'll just happened to meet us there, and I present you.
Oh.
And Mr. Jefferson always suggests tea in the drawing room after the inspection. And when he does, I'll invite you.
You wouldn't dare.
Well, wouldn't I, though?
Tea with Mr. Jefferson? Why, I wouldn't know what to say. I'd stutter and... Of course, if he talked about medicine, I do know something about that.
Then you'll be there at the paddock at 2 o'clock.
Holy Jerusalem, I'm scared.
Well, tell me, man, dear, because I've got to leave
here. I'll be there, all right, but I...
Goodbye.
Sally, do you have to go?
Yes, dear. Don't forget the paddock at 2 sharp.
But suppose he doesn't want to go there.
Oh, I'll manage it. By hook or by crook, he'll be there.
Well, I guess Your Excellency is finding these tables none too imposing after domiciling yourself in that big castle up there in Washington.
On the contrary, Mr. Cochran. A man's home is his castle, and Monticello will always be that to me.
Yes, sir.
You say you've laid out some new turkey runs. I'd like to see them.
Right this way, Mr. President.
Father.
They're just a few steps past...
Father?
Yes, Sally.
What time is it?
Well, let's see now. It lacks but 1 minute of 2 o'clock.
Oh.
Now, if Your Excellency will kindly
come... Father... His Excellency hasn't seen the paddock yet.
His Excellency has seen it 100 times. There's nothing new there. It's the turkey runs...
Well, couldn't we just look at the paddock?
No.
Oh. What time is it, please?
It's now about 1 minute past. Why are you so interested in the time all of a sudden?
1 minute past? Oh. I don't think I feel very well.
No, Sally.
I feel faint.
No, Sally.
I believe I'm about to have... To have an attack of the vapors.
You do, do you?
Perhaps if we could rest a moment in the paddock.
Sally, if you want to rest in the paddock, go there and rest. Now, if Your Excellency will be good enough to...
No, no, Mr. Cochran. Somehow I, too, have an overwhelming desire to visit the paddock. I never before realized the irresistible fascination of that place. After you, my dear Sally.
Well, here's the paddock, Sally. And it looks no different than it ever did.
With one possible exception, sir, that rather tense-looking young man pacing up and down near the rail. He seems quite perturbed about something. Would you by any chance know who he is, Sally?
Who, Mr. President? Which young man?
Which one? How many do you see?
Oh, that one. Oh, yes, yes, I see which one you mean.
Well, do you know him or don't you know him?
Never mind, Mr. Cochran. The young man is approaching. I believe we'll soon find the clue to this mystery.
Why, Sally. I mean, Miss Corcoran. I never dreamed of finding you here.
Why, Mr. Druce. What a surprise.
Yes, isn't it?
Isn't it, though? Mr. President, may I present a young gentleman of my acquaintance, Mr. John Druce.
I'm very happy to meet you, young man.
It's a great privilege, sir.
Excuse me, John. And this is my father.
Oh, pleased to make your acquaintance, sir.
How do you do? Now, if you'll excuse us, sir.
One moment, Mr. Corcoran. I have somehow lost interest in turkey runs for this afternoon. I believe I should like a cup of tea. Would you like that, Sally?
Oh, yes, Mr. President.
Yes, I thought you would, for your vapors, of course. Mr. Druce, would you care to join us? Another cup of tea, Sally?
No, Mr. President, thank you.
Mr. Druce?
No, thank you, Mr. President.
Very well, you may proceed, Mr. Cochran.
Well, Mr. President, as I was saying, I've installed the new brick ovens, as you suggested in your epistle.
Yes, excellent. I'll need them for the new extension I'm planning. An entire wing, Mr. Cochran. You've workmen enough, I trust.
Well, no, sir, we haven't. You see, sir, well, it's the smallpox, sir. Mm. It's took away 4 of our best men, and only last week...
Oh, the pox...
There's no telling when a man will be took down with it. You see him alive and healthy 1 minute, and a corpse the next. Oh, it's a terrible thing, sir. Terrible.
Mr. Cochran, can you describe the symptoms of these men once they've been afflicted?
Well, they seem to break out in sores, and there's a good deal of regurgitating, and pains in the back, and head, and a kind of dizziness.
I see. Mr. Druce.
Yes, sir?
As a physician...
Oh, not yet, Mr. President. I'm still studying.
Oh, but he will be soon, Mr. President. His professors say he's brilliant, don't they, John? I mean, Mr. Druce.
No, of course not. Your Excellency mustn't mind what Sally... I mean, Miss Corcoran says. She's just...
But I do mind, sir. I think Sally, I mean, Miss Corcoran, is an exceedingly handsome and an intelligent young woman.
Oh, thank you, Mr. President. Well, and he is brilliant.
Mr. Druce. These symptoms you've just heard described, would they warrant a positive diagnosis of smallpox?
Yes, sir, they would.
Beyond any doubt whatsoever?
Beyond any doubt, sir.
And the cure?
There is none, sir.
Hmm?
There is no known cure for the smallpox, Mr. President, and no preventive.
Really? Seems to me I've heard of something referred to as a vaccination.
Oh, that. Oh, my professors up at Boston have spent a great deal of time and effort to explode that theory, Mr. President.
Have they? And I take it they've exploded it to their own satisfaction.
Oh, yes, sir. Nobody believes in that anymore, with the exception of a notorious quack of the name of...
Waterhouse.
Yes, sir. That's his name. How did you know that?
Mr. Jefferson knows all about a great many things, John.
And if I were you, boy, I wouldn't presume to be an authority on anything when talking to the President of the United States.
Well, I don't claim to be an authority, Mr. Corcoran. It just so happens, however, that the one thing I do know something about is medicine. Why, it's my life's work.
Then you'd better be starting in all over again in some other line. You ain't doing so good at it.
But look here, sir,
Don't you look here to me, you young whippersnapper.
Father, John, please. The President.
Mr. Druce, have you heard of a particular matter extracted from the pustules of one afflicted with cowpox, a benign disease, to ward off the ravages of smallpox, a fatal one?
Oh, yes, Mr. President, I've heard of it. That's the technique used by that quack Waterhouse.
I do not believe Dr. Waterhouse a quack, sir. Why do you?
Because my professors have told me he is, sir.
I see. And are these professors infallible men? Have they never made mistakes?
Well, they're medical men, sir. And begging Your Excellency's pardon, I would take their word in a medical matter over that of any layman, even though he be the President of the United States.
How dare you, sir? How dare you speak to the...
It's all right, Mr. Corcoran. Young man, you place me in a somewhat surprising position. Heretofore, it's been my assumption that blind adherence to tradition was the prerogative of venerable graybeards like myself, while most progress was forced upon us from beneath by the young. You surprise me, sir. May I ask why you're so bitter against this innovation that may possibly save the lives of thousands?
Well, the answer, Mr. President, is that it has killed as many as it has saved.
Your statistics are debatable. I suppose they were acquired by your professors in Boston.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Druce, I must admit, sir, to a certain disappointment in you, although I cannot help but admire your courage. If all mankind were to follow your philosophy of closing the mind to progress, we should still be in the Dark Ages. Look at Galileo and Columbus and even our own Eli Whitney. These gentlemen gave no heed to tyrannic professors. Mr. Druce, intellectual tyranny is worse even than political tyranny. And I, sir, have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of men. Mr. Corcoran.
Yes, sir?
At 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, you will have assembled on the east portico at Monticello all my tenants, workers, householders, servants, and slaves. And I shall proceed to vaccinate one and all with this serum that Dr. Waterhouse was kind enough to send me. Good day, Sally, and gentlemen.
You are listening to The Cavalcade of America, starring Rex Harrison as Thomas Jefferson in Experiment at Monticello, presented by the DuPont Company, makers of better things for better living through chemistry. It's the following morning on the east portico of the main house at Monticello. Gathered about the president are his family, his tenants, workmen and slaves, almost 100 all told. Mr. Jefferson is just concluding his statement in favor of vaccination against smallpox.
It is therefore my suggestion, and I do not put this in the form of a command, that you all submit to this newest invention in man's eternal struggle against disease. Before indicating your attitudes in this matter, however, I pray you give heed to this young man here, Mr. Druce, who, as a student of medicine, has an opinion quite contrary to mine concerning the merits of vaccination. Permit me to present to you Mr. Druce.
I don't know what to say, sir. I feel all mixed up.
Tell them what you believe, my boy, but true to your opinion. Go on, they're waiting.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what to say. Needless to remark, I am one of Mr. Jefferson's greatest admirers. I believe it only fair, however, to inform you that this course he intends to pursue, this vaccination, is frowned upon and discouraged by the best medical minds up north. It has resulted in many deaths, just how many is a matter of dispute. And whether these deaths were due to improper vaccination or not, nobody knows. For myself, I would not presume to advise you. I am merely rendering a statement of the facts. Thank you for listening to me.
Well spoken, Mr. Drews, well spoken. And now, my friends, the matter is in your hands. We will proceed in an orderly, democratic fashion. When I put the question, will all those who wish to be vaccinated be so good as to respond by saying aye? Those otherwise minded will say nay. Is that understood?
Yes, sir.
Very well, then. The resolution before the House is to be or not to be vaccinated. Let those for the affirmative respond.
Aye!
Against? The resolution is carried. Ladies and gentlemen, I salute you. Kindly appear at this place tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, prepared for your vaccinations.
It's 4 o'clock the following afternoon at Monticello. Since 8 this morning, men, women, and children have been trooping in and out of the East Portico in the first mass vaccination in American history. Thomas Jefferson, alone and unaided, has administered the serum. Standing beside him is his daughter, Patsy, who enters the names in a small notebook.
That last one, the small girl. Did you get her name, Patsy?
Yes, Father. Prudence George.
And the one before that, the tall Negro.
Yes, Father. It was all Joshua.
Ah, well, that finishes it, then. Friends, that's all I'll require of you now. You may go back to your homes and your occupations. Some of you may be troubled with a mild headache or a slight touch of fever. It's of no importance and will shortly disappear. I thank you for your cooperation and will visit you individually tomorrow to ascertain your condition. Again, I thank you. Leave, I'll sit down now, Patsy.
You look very tired, Father.
I am. Oh, you know, my dear, I'm getting unwelcome proof every day that I'm not as young as I used to be. I really don't think I could have managed one more inoculation, not today.
I'll bring you a cup of tea, Father. That always refreshes you.
Thank you, my dear.
Good afternoon, Mr. President.
Why, Sally, good afternoon. Would you care to sit down and smile at a tired old man?
It'd be a pleasure, sir. But first, if you don't mind...
Yes, Sally?
Mr. President, would you be good enough to vaccinate me, please?
But, my dear Sally, I've refrained on purpose from asking you to...
I know you have, Mr. President. You walked right by me twice this morning and three times this afternoon. I thought perhaps you were angry with me.
Why, no, my dear. I just thought it diplomatic in view of the medical opinions of Mr. Drew.
Him? I have no interest in that traitor, sir. Any man who goes against the President of the United States
is... Still, Sally, this is a democracy, you know. Every man has a right to his opinion.
Mr. President, would you be depriving a woman of the benefits of science just because her ex-fiancé is as stupid and as stubborn as a mule? Is that scientific?
No, Sally, it isn't. And in the name of science, I capitulate. Patsy, another patient.
Sally, please, don't run away from me.
I have nothing to discuss with you, you Benedict Arnold.
But I was only standing up for my honest medical opinion. Even the president wanted me to do that.
I have no interest whatsoever in your opinions, medical or otherwise.
Oh, Sally, I thought you loved me.
I thought so, too. Wasn't it ridiculous of me?
Now, listen to me, Sally.
Oh, don't touch me. My vaccination.
You mean you, too?
Certainly. And proud I am to have been vaccinated in person by the President of the United States. Goodbye to you, Mr. Drews.
And all the next day and the next, and well into the following week, President Jefferson made the rounds of his patients, always accompanied by Patsy.
Well, Mr. Trimble, and how's your head today?
It's much better, sir, but my arm's still mighty sore.
Write that down, Patsy. Mr. Wallace Trimble, third day, headache disappeared, arm still sore. Mrs. Reynolds, has the fever gone down?
Yes, Your Worship, it's all gone now. But there's kind of a swelling, sir, in the pit of my left arm.
Oh, put that down, Patsy. Mrs. Dorothea Reynolds, widow, fever abated, slight swelling of the axillary gland. How's your youngster, Mrs. Reynolds? Any ill effects?
Nothing of the kind, Your Worship. It's just like he wasn't vaccinated at all.
Got that, Patsy. Elisha Reynolds, age 3, 5th day. No ill effects whatsoever.
The round of visits continued every day for 2 weeks, and at the end of that period, all the data was in. Here are the facts.
There were no deaths. Now, mark that well, Patsy. No deaths from vaccination.
I have it, Father.
About 1 person in 5 had a slight fever, and 1 in 4 a headache. You got that?
Yes, Father.
Only 2 patients showed soreness about the arms which required common dressings. And mark this, Patsy.
Mm-hmm.
After subsequent exposure to the smallpox epidemic raging in this part of Virginia, not one of these people who were vaccinated came down with the disease. A great victory for science, Patsy.
It's spring again, a year later. President Jefferson has again returned to Monticello. There he sits on the east portico where the famous mass vaccination took place. Beside him are his daughter Patsy and Sally Corcoran. Out of the shadows, a young man appears. He approaches the president.
Mr. President.
Why, Mr. Druce. How are you, sir? What brings you to Virginia?
Well, sir, my college semester is just over, and... Well, I seized this first opportunity to pay you a visit.
And a privilege it is to have you, sir. By the way, you remember my daughter Patsy?
Oh, certainly. How do you do, Mrs. Randolph?
Welcome to Monticello, Mr. Drews.
And, of course, you recall Sally. I mean, Miss Corcoran.
How do, Miss Corcoran?
How do, Mr. Drews?
Well, Mr. President, I came down here for one purpose and one purpose only.
Indeed? I wonder what that could be, sir.
To apologize, Mr. President. To apologize to you in person about the matter of vaccination for smallpox.
Oh, yes. I do seem to recall something about our being on opposite sides of the road in that little affair.
Oh, sir, you were absolutely right in your premise from beginning to end. Up in Boston, we too have followed the methods laid down by Dr. Waterhouse and applied by you. Of the hundreds we vaccinated with a cowpox serum, not one has ever been afflicted with smallpox, even when he visited some area where an epidemic was raging. Well, sir, my professors offer their congratulations.
Well, thank you, Mr. Drews. And kindly convey my esteemed regards to those gentlemen of learning.
I will, sir. Thank you. Well, Mr. President, that's really all I came down here for, to apologize. And I've done it.
And very handsomely, too, if I may say so.
Well, I guess that's all. Goodbye, Mr. President.
Goodbye, Mr. Drews.
Oh. Goodbye, then.
Goodbye. Oh, Mr. Drews.
Yes, Mr. President.
It just occurs to me that there's a bright moon along the garden path tonight. Perhaps you'd care to go for a stroll before you leave with Sally. I mean, Miss Corcoran.
Would I? Do I have your permission, Mrs. Randolph?
Certainly, Mr. Drews.
Do I have... your permission, Sally?
Oh, yes, John. I'm thinking I'd like that very much.
Thomas Jefferson, 1743 to 1826. Architect, astronomer, mathematician. Philosopher and statesman. Amateur musician, inventor, scientist. And student of everything else his agile mind touched upon. President of the United States, author of the Declaration of Independence, and courageous exponent of the shining credo that dominated his life.
I believe in equal and exact justice to all men, of whatever state or persuasion, religious or political. And I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
Tonight's cavalcade play, Experiment at Monticello, was written by Arthur Arendt and directed by Jack Zoller. Music was composed by Arden Cornwell and conducted by Donald Bryan. This is Ted Pearson speaking. Rex Harrison is currently starring in the Broadway stage success, Anne of the Thousand Days. Next week at Cavalcade Time, we will bring a suspenseful and exciting radio play, Secret Operation, presenting one of Hollywood's most popular stars, John Payne. Cavalcade of America comes to you each week from the stage of the Longacre Theater on Broadway in New York and is presented by the DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.